Maybe one of the... Somebody can do kirtan 5 minutes.
Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda
Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda
Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare,
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jaya Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Prabhupada.
Jaya Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Jaya Prabhupada.
ಕಲಿಯುಗ ಧರ್ಮ ಕೃಷ್ಣ
ಗೌಡ ಶಿವನಂದೇ ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಹರಿನಾಮ ಸಂಕೀರ್ತನ ಕಿ ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಮಹಾಪ್ರಭು ಕಿ ಜಯ ಹರಿ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಮಹಾಮಂತ್ರ ಕಿ ಗೌಡ ಶಿವನಂದೇ ಹರಿ ಹರಿ ಬೋಲ್ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ವೆಲ್ಕಮ್ ಟು ಎವ್ರಿವನ್ ವಿ ಆರ್ ಕಂಟಿನ್ಯೂಯಿಂಗ್ ಅವರ್ seminar on Vaishnava Vedic sociology. We probably have some new attendees, and I'll take a few minutes to just very briefly review what we have covered yesterday. Yesterday we gave a general introduction to the whole idea or concept of sociology, basically making the difference between Western sociology, Indian sociology, and Vedic sociology, mentioning how sociology, in terms of scholars and intellectuals, is a relatively recent science. The very word sociology has been coined around the time of the French Revolution, when there was a whole revolt against the dominant culture of that time, which was largely based on Christianity and monarchy, but a Christianity that had become very corrupt, as well as a monarchy that was also very corrupt, Kali Yuga. And therefore there was a rise and a rejection, actually, especially by the intellectual class, and that brought about what we call the French Revolution, which was followed actually by the Industrial Revolution. And we are still on the wave of the, you know, Industrial Revolution, which brought in all kinds of mechanization, urbanization, globalization, etc., etc. And we were pointing out how, by the very definition of this modern term, which was coined by this French philosopher Auguste Comte, that now that we have rejected, you know, religion because it's corrupt, or at least the leadership is corrupt, now that we have rejected monarchy because it's also corrupt, we only accept as reality what we can see and perceive, isn't it? And therefore, the modern era kicked in, so to speak, or was born and continues to this day. And those who were from India kind of rejected certain aspects of this whole idea or ideology. And so sociologists in India wanted to retain some of the culture and some of the traditions from India. But unfortunately, that took on somewhat of a nationalistic kind of approach, And without the purity of thought that we find in the Vedic, actual Vedic understanding of what is sociology. And therefore, the Vedic approach is what we are presenting here, and what the world needs as well, is based, as we know, on the Vedic understanding, and presents a much more balanced, and therefore we use the term holistic approach. Holistic approach takes into consideration the two major realities of existence, which is part of the presentation we made on the topic of education. We'll just come back to that in a few minutes. That actual knowledge of reality must take into consideration both the spiritual as well as the material level of existence. And therefore, Vedic knowledge within the Shastra, beginning from the Bhagavad Gita itself, as well as commentaries by our acharyas, speak about sociology as being this natural division of society that Krishna himself has created. Chatur Varnyam Maya Sristam Guna Karma Vibhagasaha. And therefore, both Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur as well as Srila Prabhupada very clearly indicate if anybody wants to study sociology, the best and perfect form of sociology is to be found in the natural divisions of the varnas and ashramas. And the same statement as given by Srila Prabhupada. Then we introduce the concept of char vidya, which is what we are systematically looking at. Yesterday we covered two of those four char vidya. So char vidya are the four basic sciences that make up, we could say, all the knowledge needed for an individual and for society to be well balanced and to attain, again, within the framework of Vedic knowledge, the perfection of life, which is, of course, self-realization. So those char vidyas, it's on a slide here. I'll bring it up actually, so that, and I'll just come back. See, char vidya reviewed. Just 1 second here. Yeah, a lot of references. We'll be going over these in a few minutes. I should have put that in the beginning. So, we looked at yesterday the science of philosophy, which is the beginning and the basis of all knowledge that sets into motion the other three sciences, and which are a must for anyone to properly understand and to apply these other three sciences, which are the sciences of the twice born, beginning with the science of education, which we again covered yesterday, which is a science for the brahmanas especially. They concentrate, and then there are for the Brahmanas, 14 standard Chaturdasa Vidya, 14 books of knowledge, which are there in our Shastra. And these 14 books of knowledge have traditionally and to this day been the standard curriculum in Gurukula. And the point we were making also yesterday is that these same 14 books of knowledge need to also be introduced in our educational system within ISKCON if we want to actually be more in line with what our traditional culture is giving us or teaching us. So the first of the four sciences, science of philosophy, which is divided in those three categories, Sankhya, Yoga, and Tarka. Of course, we won't go into details because that was covered yesterday. Science of education, and then today's topic, this morning, the science of politics. Should be of interest to everyone. politics, wow. politics is one of the very important sciences because unless one studies in detail, one cannot become a good leader in society. In the same way that brahmanas, unless they study these 14 books of knowledge, they cannot become qualified brahmanas, isn't it? And later this afternoon, we will look at the fourth science, which is referred to as Vartha, or the science of economics. That should also be of interest, you know. Economy, money, is of interest to everyone. But in we'll see in this context how the science of economics is very different than what we have been taught, and very different to what is being practiced or taught in modern day society. So now I will have to reverse what I did here by going back to the beginning. One small second. Yeah. Yeah. So this is the, basic content. These different quotes, very important quotes from the Srimad Bhagavatam in reference to this science of politics. And then, well, before that, I'll just show what is at the beginning of every slide. Very, it gives the essence of what Vedic culture is all about. This principle of simplicity, which is very much lacking in modern day society, rather the opposite is there, complexity and confusion, is a main theme that we need to understand. And when we live according to the guidelines given in the Shastra, then we can actually experience. It's one of the important qualities for devotees as well. And then we also made the very important point how Vedic culture is primarily an agrarian-based culture. And for all of us who are city folks, it is not obvious. It's not something we can immediately grasp or understand. But actually, if we read attentively and also meditate on what we read from the pages of the Bhagavatam, because it's repeated again and again by Srila Prabhupada, by our acharyas, by the Shastras themselves, the more we understand this very important point that the standard way of living and the standard culture is meant to be connected with land and cows, the more we understand this, we will understand how present-day society, which is highly urbanized and continues to be, and it is actually being planned in this way. The leaders in the world, if you study a very important document that came out a few years ago called Agenda 21. Anyone heard about Agenda 21? Okay, maybe a few of you. Agenda 21 is since the last 20 years or more possibly, the leaders of different countries have been having summit meetings, you know, like 150 countries coming together and looking, projecting how things should be in the future. And one of their plans is that actually we should gradually organize things in such a way that we move people out of the villages. It's a whole a planned program. And it's working, as we can see. India, just maybe 2 years ago, for the first time in its history, known history, for the first time, the percentage of people in the villages came below 70%. And now it's getting close to probably 60, and the prediction is that the global statistic in terms of population within a few years, within 10 or so years, 50% of the population will be living in cities globally. Of course, in America, because America is ahead of everyone, especially in terms of degradation, it's ahead of everyone. 98% of the population now are living in towns and cities. They're ahead of us. You see. So this is a very vital and essential point that Vedic culture can properly be followed, lived, and the objectives that are given to us in our Vedic literatures can best be realized when we live in this more sattvic atmosphere. Srila Prabhupada describes modern day cities as being far from being sattvic, isn't it? The total opposite. As a matter of fact, I was mentioning to one devotee yesterday how, because we spoke a little bit about cities, and of course some city folks are a little uneasy to hear some of the statements regarding cities and what Srila Prabhupada mentioned, but we should be eager to hear, you know. So in one conversation, Srila Prabhupada mentions, actually, we don't want cities. Then, we don't want cities as they exist today. Cities that are primarily, as we know, in the mode of passion and ignorance. Anyways, I shouldn't take too much time here, otherwise we'll miss our presentation. So, coming back to the content today, we'll go directly to these references, and then we've already seen, so we'll just skip that slide on the Charvidya, four sciences. And then what is very, I would say, essential in the context of Vedic politics are these seven constituents. These are very scientific and very fundamental information that is needed, especially for brahmanas. Why? Because brahmanas, we know as devotees that the brahmanas are meant to give guidance, isn't it, to all the members of society, especially the leaders. But if brahmanas don't know what leaders are supposed to do, how they'll guide them? And that's important also for us within our ISKCON society, because as we all know, Srila Prabhupada, from the very beginning, even before going to America, was emphasizing on the need to re-establish Brahminical culture, isn't it? So these, we'll be looking at these seven constituents which describe rather in detail the qualities of a king, the qualities of a minister, then the qualities of a kingdom, the qualities of a fort, the qualities of a treasury, the qualities of an army, and the qualities of allies. These are the seven fundamental basic aspects that are necessary for a kingdom to be properly managed and to flourish, right? So a few references here from the Bhagavatam. We know that Bhishma Dev is one of our authorities, being himself a Kshatriya. Normally Kshatriyas are our householders. He's an exception, of course, Bhishma Dev. Most of the Kshatriyas that we study in the Bhagavatam, Prithu Maharaj and Yudhishthira Maharaj, they're all, to a large extent. So I want to read especially the second paragraph, which is following here. The conception of four castes and four orders of life as planned by the Lord himself is to accelerate transcendental qualities. We touched on this point a little bit yesterday. Someone was asking the question, is it really necessary, you know, to have or to follow these four varnas and ashramas? So here the point is being made that actually they are meant to help us develop these qualities. When there is order, when there are systems established, authorized systems, you know, created by the Lord himself, then naturally by following these systems, by respecting these systems, more easily, more naturally, we will be able to develop our spiritual consciousness. Yeah. And another reference, again from the Bhagavatam, from Bhishma Dev. Bhishma Dev, as we know, is one of the 12 Mahajans, so therefore an authority. So the Vanasrava Dharma is prescribed for the civilized human being just to train him to successfully terminate human life. And there are these nine qualifications that are especially mentioned by Bhishma Dev. And in that purport, Srila Prabhupada, I'll bring it up in a few minutes, one cannot be called a civilized person without acquiring the above mentioned preliminary qualities. And I'm bringing them up one by one. The first one, not to become angry. And of course, you know, kama, krodha. So when the kama is not satisfied, the krodha, the anger will come. So in Krishna consciousness, we dovetail our activities so that we don't unnecessarily become angry. So people who are not practicing or following Vedic injunctions have a natural tendency, and we see that all the time. A second qualification is mentioned by Bhishma Dev, not to lie, which is, of course, one of the basic pillars of dharma. The first one, satyam. Satyam daryatapa socham, truthfulness, not to lie. Three, to equally distribute wealth. which, of course, if one is not a devotee, he cannot do that. Number four, important also for devotees, for everyone, learning to forgive. because in Kali Yuga, so many things happen that if we don't forgive, we cannot progress. The numbers are wrong there. No, it's okay. To beget children only by one's legitimate wife. To be pure in mind and hygienic in body. Not to be inimical towards anyone. To be simple. Again, this quality of simplicity comes up. And to support servants and subordinates. We were mentioning how, and this is Prabhupada's comment on this, we were mentioning this point regarding the dvijas, means the brahmanas, kshatriyas, and vaishyas. They themselves, by nature, are independent. And they're meant to help others in their different activities, and actually the majority of any population will be depending on them. So this is being, especially naturally, the Kshatriyas. There are three, it's also explained, three basic activities for Kshatriyas, for leaders. I didn't put it on the chart here. One is actually, the first one is protection. Physical protection in terms of land, for example, the kingdom. That's why the army is necessary. Protection of citizens as well. Protection of animals, especially protection of cows. And also protection of dharma. Because a kshatriya, as we know, is one who has been trained in the principles of dharma. And he acts, of course, under the directives of the brahmana, qualified brahmana. So protection covers many things, as we can see. Then second, which is very important, administration. Protection, then administration means organizing society. Having different departments, these are all detailed actually in what is called this, all this is coming from the Kautilya Arthashastra, as we mentioned yesterday. Revenue department and tax department, sewage department, so many very, very major, collectorate, so many major posts. And India probably, of all the countries, reflects, because it's part of the culture, reflects the closest what is there or what was there in the Shastra. Of course, quite a few years ago, when I was in Indonesia, one of my godbrothers, who was very involved with publishing of books, so some people would visit him in his home, and one time a few army people came to see him. Indonesia, by the way, for those who may not know, just a few hundred years ago was totally Vedic. I mean, it was Vaishnav. Vaishnava kings were there. And so many big temples to this day one can find. And as he was talking with these two army persons, they became interested in knowing more about Krishna consciousness. They had come actually to get some books. And it was very interesting because at one point they mentioned to him, to my godbrother, that in the army, when there is a kind of a secret undertaking, that there's a special word that indicates that something very secret is about to happen, whatever it may be. And they were telling that actually the word for that secret, the word that indicates, is Krishna. So, the link or the connection with Vedic culture. So we probably see that, of course, a lot more here in India. So going to some other statements from the Bhagavatam. These are specific, actually in the same verse that we were looking at, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada makes the following statement describing Kshatriyas. He puts this in italic, means he emphasizes that in order for one to actually be a qualified Kshatriya, one should never accept charity. Rather, one should give charity. Never accept charity. Actually, accepting charity is only for the brahmanas, isn't it? And also, an important quality is that the administrators should never pretend to become nonviolent. There is an injunction, when a king or administrator, especially a king, becomes anointed by the brahmana, there's a whole ceremony, there is a a special mantra that is recited by the Brahmana, whereby upon giving, in the ceremony, they give what is called a sword. In Indonesia, they call it the kris, which is actually, you know, through mantra, is like full of power. Anyways, the mantra given by the Brahmana explains that actually, now I'm giving you this sword. it's also referred to in the Arthashastra as the rod of chastisement. So in the mantra it says that, now I'm giving you this sword on behalf of the Lord. You should not overuse nor underuse this sword. So you should use it when it's necessary. So this is the point being made here. And then another important aspect, which we find only in the Vedic culture, is that in fighting, the king or the president should never return home without being hurt by the enemy. Of course, Prabhupada explains that this is never to be seen in modern day times because they don't go to the battlefield. They just like remote control, look at what's happening on the battlefield. So in various places in the Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada explains how politics is part of what society is made up of. We even hear reference how actually the greatest politician was Krishna, isn't it? Yeah. The whole Mahabharata is full of politics. So this is just one of many references where Srila Prabhupada indicates that it is part of what we should be learning. By culture of such knowledge, a human society can attain perfection of life. So in other words, and this is also an important point, as devotees, we are not meant to learn only about spiritual things. We are here in the material world, and at some point, Krishna, when we are ready, and when things are in proper place, will give us, because actually the world is meant to be ruled by Vaishnavas, by Krishna conscious people. Of course, Prabhupada made the point very clear, it's not that ISKCON is going to rule the world, but ISKCON as a Brahminical culture, as a culture of promoting Vedic knowledge, will advise leaders who actually should be Vaishnavas. You see, we are far from that, but you know, since the beginning, since Srila Prabhupada established the movement in the Western countries, and it's interesting, actually many devotees may not know this, in the very early days in America, Srila Prabhupada actually authorized a political party of devotees. And the name of that political party, In God We Trust, what is written on the U.S. Dollar bill. So the devotees actually were, you know, getting dressed in normal suit and keeping long hair, and they were running for office. This went on for about a year or two in the early days. So in other words, in many different purports, not only in purports, but we see how Srila Prabhupada was ready to take certain actions to bring us closer to what this society is meant to do, actually, in the world, in terms of bringing about, on all levels, Krishna consciousness. And I would say, especially in terms of leadership, these two levels of leadership being the most important, the Brahmana leaders and the Kshatriya leaders. This is a series of points actually being made in reference to the next reference in the Bhagavatam in the context of Krishna and Balaram studying at the ashram of Sandipani Muni, isn't it? So, what is this connected with one of the principles we mentioned yesterday regarding students? You know, students have to be qualified. Submissiveness, pranipat, tadvidi, pranipat, tadvidi, pranipatena. So submissiveness was there, therefore they were qualified. Of course, Krishna is qualified. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there was a qualified teacher, Sandipani Muni, as well as qualified students. And what did Sandipani Muni, just keep in mind, right? Sandipani Muni is a Brahmana. But so as a Brahmana, he started by teaching them, again, what we covered yesterday, the science of education, the Vedas. Vedas and Vedangas, these 14 books of knowledge. This was part of the teaching, important part of the teaching, naturally. And then, after giving this basic understanding, he taught them Dhanurveda, one of the four Vedangas. And in that purport, Srila Prabhupada makes a reference to what is called sixfold science of politics. So naturally, whether it's politics, whether it's education, or whether, as we will look at later this afternoon, economics, it is very methodically presented because it's very scientific. And naturally, of course, Krishna and Balaram, they learned all of this in one day. every science that was presented, they would learn it in one day. And normally it would take months, if not years, actually. Yeah. And continuing in this purport, these are the sixfold political aspects of science. They all have their name, making peace, war, marching, etc. like that. So just to give an idea, those who actually would like to study, and especially those who are Brahmanas, at least some of the Brahmanas need to study the science of politics. Some of our Brahmanas need to study the science of economics as well. Then there are ample references in our Shastra for that. And in addition to the Vedas, means the whole spiritual topics, in addition to Dhanurveda, there's also another section which Sandipani Muni also taught, and these are what is called the 64 arts and sciences, which are very detailed and very complete. And of course, the important point at the end also, we were mentioning in the context of education how Vedic education is free. The students are not required to pay, nor are the teachers paid as well. But at the end, there is this, Guru Dakshina. So this, of course, in India is known, although not followed in modern-day society. A few more references before we go to the essence of our presentation today. references whereby Prabhupada is mentioning the importance of studying various different aspects of society or various material sciences in which society can function properly. So we don't have to read those, they're just general references. Anything and everything that can be dovetailed in Krishna's service and that is necessary for a proper organization of society when connected with Krishna is therefore bona fide, authorized, and becomes, So these are the what we brought up a little earlier, just to keep in focus what we are covering. And now we come to the seven essential constituents that we mentioned a little earlier. And we will go one by one to understand. There's in this next slide, actually, it makes an interesting, parallel with what we find in the Vedic, in our Shastra, and what some people who are from India extract and apply in modern day society. And you can see this in the following chart. The state can be compared to any organization that a person has. This is especially important for any persons who are into business or would like to get into business, or any organization that we want to be successful. So the king corresponds to the leader or the head of a corporation or organization. The minister is, you need a right-hand person, you need a good manager to execute things in your organization. The kingdom is your market, isn't it? The fort is the office. The treasury, finances, naturally. The army are your team, team of people, and the allies is like, making friends. One time I was at the Tokyo airport, and Japanese people, when they, I don't know if you've had that, it was very vivid, right in the middle of the airport, and some business people were meeting, and they exchanged their business card, and, you know, for half an hour practically, they're just like, making friendship very important. This is something also important within our ISKCON society. There are 48 qualities that are meant to be found in a good king. Not easy to be a king, to become a king. So these are mentioned here. Qualities of one easily approachable. Secondly, so there are 14 of these qualities. then there are 8 qualities of intellect. Naturally, one has to have a good brain, isn't it? And then there are 4 qualities in terms of energy. And 22 qualities in terms of personal excellences, which makes a total of 48 qualities. So one may think, well, you know, is it really necessary to to learn these things? Actually, it is. Because how, if we don't know, especially those who are meant to counsel or guide such leaders, if we don't know what qualities to find in these people, naturally, we won't be able to guide them properly. So just to give, the rest of the presentation is giving the detailed information that is found in the Arthashastra, isn't it? So these are the qualities of one easily approachable, that one should be born in a high family. So therefore, the importance of samskaras, isn't it? If one follows samskaras, then that will be there. one should be endowed with good fortune, intelligence, and spirit. one should be able to take counsel from others, naturally, especially the brahmanas. One should be pious. Raja Rishi, one should be knowing, and not only knowing but practicing the principles of dharma. Truthful in speech. Well, as we read these, just think about our present leaders in modern day society. We're very far, far away. And that's why we have a mess all over the world. Not breaking his promise, grateful, liberal. These are the first eight of 14 qualities. And then, of great energy, not dilatory, means causing unnecessary delay. A man of action, timely. Yeah. Interesting point coming up here. With weak neighboring princes. You know, later on it explains what are the qualities of an enemy. Then resolute, that's part of our sadhana actually. Not having a mean counsel, not having people who are against you, who are not really supporting. Desirous of training, kshatriya, it's not that when somebody finishes one's studies in Gurukula that he stops to practice. It's just like whether a brahmana or a kshatriya, we have to continue reading, studying the shastra, and for kshatriyas, they have to continue training themselves, isn't it? Yeah. So that's the reference here, and those are the 14 qualities of one easily approachable. What are the qualities of intellect? That's also important for every devotee, actually. Yeah. Desire to learn. Good at listening. Ability to learn. Ability to remember. Retention. I was mentioning the point yesterday how the more we use these gadgets, I suppose I shouldn't use them, but the more we depend on these gadgets, then we lose our ability to remember. We lose the ability of retention, isn't it? Then thorough understanding, naturally. I think we've all heard how the king, he would have. It's very interesting, actually, in this book. I don't bring it up here, but there is a minute-by-minute schedule of the king's activities during the day, from the time he wakes right to the time he sleeps. And at some particular point, there is like, the amount of time is also given. He goes to the court to meet or hear any complaints. And he decides. You know. And before he goes to the to the place where they have their meetings, assembly hall. On the way there, he actually takes darshan of cows. Very interesting. It was mentioned. You know, he takes blessings of mother cow. Because that's one of the foremost areas of protection, as we mentioned. Important one that we don't sufficiently practice, reflecting, you know, meditating. Not spacing out, but reflecting. And then the ability to reject, rejecting what is false. And very intent on establishing dharma, the truth, isn't it? The principles of dharma. So these are the qualities of intellect for a king. And then there are four qualities of energy that are also mentioned. Bravery, naturally. That's mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. Resentment. Resentment of anything that is opposite to Dharma. Quickness. Immediately will act. Just like Parikshit Maharaj immediately took out his sword. Isn't it? And dexterity. Ability. to do all kinds of things, especially in terms of fighting. These are the qualities of energy four. And then there are 22 qualities of what is called personal excellence. So whoever is thinking about becoming a king, it's a long list, right? of qualities one needs to develop. The first one, eloquent. One was a good speaker, able to please his audience. Bold, yeah, able to confront. Endowed with memory, intellect, and strength. Exalted. When we come in contact with that person, we can immediately understand, you know, by his demeanor, by his speech, etc. Easy to manage. Can do things easily. It's like he doesn't have to pull his hair. It's easy for him. Trained in arts, therefore the importance of Gurukula, and free from vices. Naturally, someone who follows Dharma. These are the first 7 of 22. Able to lead the army. A natural leader. People will follow. Able to requite all obligations and injury in prescribed manner. Interesting. Possessed with a sense of shame, naturally. If one knows about Dharma and somehow unable or doesn't, then he will be regretting. Able to take suitable action in calamities, normal conditions. Actually, I forgot to mention the third. I mentioned about Kshatriya's protection, administration. The third one actually is welfare. This refers to this point. In times of if there's a drought, famine, whatever, he'll be able to address and take action. Then number 12, seeing long and far. Seeing ahead. 13, attaching prominence to undertakings at a proper place and time and with appropriate human endeavor. So expert at Desha Kalapatra. And the 14th, able to discriminate between peace and fighting. Know when it's necessary to fight and avoid as much as possible. The example is there in the Pandavas, isn't it? And Krishna was himself at the last minute trying to avoid the war, but it was inevitable. And then just continuing here, observance of conditions and striking at the enemy's weak points, well guarded, not laughing in an undignified manner. Interesting, huh? So, someone who is an important personality, even his laughing has to be controlled or proper, whatever. Such a detail, huh? And with a glance which is straight and without a frond. I mean, you know, it's like when you're talking to that person, you're talking to that person. Eye contact. Devoid of passion, anger, stiffness, fickleness, troublesomeness. Yeah. And the last of these 22, sweet in speech, pleasing to hear, speaking with a smile and with dignity, and with conduct conforming to the advices of elders, respecting, following elders. So these are things that one should know. Now we go to the minister. I'm going to do this as quickly as possible here. Minister, there are three things important: appointment of ministers, excellences of ministers, and on deciding the qualities of the minister. So naturally, a minister, he's like the second most important person in the kingdom, right? There are seven aspects in terms of appointing ministers. One will appoint someone who is a fellow student, somebody you know, obviously, somebody that you grew up with, you went to school with, isn't it? because one knows that person. Those having same character, similar nature, those who are royal to him, of course. Those who can bring in income, that's also important. These are very practical, isn't it? Very practical guidelines before appointing someone as minister. These are the first four, seven, and the other three are those who are descendants of his father or grandfather. So that's why we see in monarchy that hierarchy, or that, you know, family descendants. It's logical. It's not just, you know, because they're family members. I mean, because they are having various qualities, being family members, they are qualified, which is different from what is happening today, for example. And those who are new men, well-versed in politics, so new blood, I guess, not just older people, and those who are naturally capable of doing, you know, the work at hand. That's the first aspect regarding ministers. And then there are 20 qualities referred to as excellences of ministers. The first one, native of the country, of noble birth, easy to hold in check. The king has to be able, I mean, it has to be, yeah. Trained in the arts, possessed of the eye of science. Intelligent, persevering. And then it continues, yeah, these are dexterous, eloquent, bold, possessed of a ready wit, etc. And the last of these qualities, friendly, firmly devoted, endowed with character, strength, health, spirit, devoid of stiffness, amiable, etc. So naturally, you know, to successfully govern a community or a kingdom, the more these qualities are there, then. And the last aspect regarding qualities, eight qualities of a minister: nationality, nobility. So I'll just go through these quickly. Training in arts, intelligence, perseverance, again, eloquence, energy and power, etc. Yeah. So we can see that there was a whole process, and again, the brahmanas had a very important role to play in helping whenever there was, we can think of the example of King Vina, for example, who had to be replaced at one point, although the brahmanas did appoint him, but then that didn't work out. Okay, these are the first six, and the last three, again, qualities of a minister. Yeah. So I just want to continue here. Now we go to the kingdom. The excellences of a country. And this is actually, when I was putting this together, yeah, well, I put it in writing here. This is very important for us to know, for those who want to choose some land, who want to start a community, for example, because in the last so many years, more and more devotees are writing to our ministry, wanting to know about, okay, we're thinking about, you know, we have 10 families, for example, we're thinking about starting a community. How do we go about doing it, and what should we know? So one of the important things to know is, well, where, the location, and the land, you know. So in a similar way for a kingdom, these guidelines that are given in the Shastra can help us as well. And I basically put this down here. out of these 21 items, we can also use those to establish a village, for example. So these are the 21 excellences of a country. Possessed of strong positions in the center and at the frontier. Of course, this is not just for ordinary, this is for like an actual kingdom, yeah. Capable of sustaining itself and others in times of distress, easy to protect, and I'll just list them without naming all of them here. Yeah. And there are, one can could comment on all of these different aspects. Country also should be attractive or charming. Having cattle, having families, naturally. Very important point about protected pastures. Fencing. Rich in animals. And interesting point, the last one, not depending on rain for water. In other words, having natural lakes, ponds, or rivers. Isn't it? Because traditionally, that's how one would do agriculture, by natural water resources. And then the last points being mentioned here in terms of what are the positive aspects in a country. Good routes or roads, farmers devoted to work, like that. Interesting, or it mentions inhabitants mostly by lower varnas. Because lower varnas means they will be able to help in various activities in the kingdom. And with men loyal and honest. Regarding the fort, and we're coming close to the end of our presentation here, construction of forts. We were recently visiting an area where there are, in Maharashtra, there are quite a few places where there are forts. Whoops. Yeah, there are four different kinds of forts that are recommended. Krishna had a water fort. Dwarka is on an island. was, isn't it, on the ocean. One needs to know how to do that. Having a fort in a mountain, which is not easy of access, is another. These are like traditional ways. In a desert or in a jungle. Now we may think, well, this is not really applicable right now, but these are part of what we should know regarding kingdoms, regarding all of these different, these seven constituents. And in the center of the country should be revenue headquarters. Yeah. The treasury, a few things about the treasury. There are four things mentioned. Acquired lawfully by the ancestors. Now this is very important for us in modern day society. Real wealth, not paper or plastic. Now we've become more advanced, you know, from paper now we're going to plastic. In Australia, I don't think they have it here in India yet, right? In Australia, all the money, all the paper money is plastic. Same thing in Canada. I don't know, it's probably cheaper because, you know, ecological concern. Save our trees. So don't, you know, paper from trees. So now plastic, petroleum. So this is crazy. You know, Prabhupada would say how modern day money currency is very bad. Also, jewels and cash means coins, different coins. And a treasury that would withstand a calamity even of a long duration in which there is no income. This is the reference. So this is the, in terms of the treasury. Now we go to the sixth or the seventh constituents in terms of the army. There are 11 aspects in terms of army. Or I suppose people with whom we work inherited from the father and the grandfather. Naturally you want to have people in the army who are obedient, whose soldiers, sons and wives are contented. So these are all practical aspects. The last of the 11, able to put up with troubles, that has fought, so an army that has fought before, that has experience in fighting, etc. And the last one, consisting mostly of kshatriyas. Yeah. And we go to the last of the seven constituents in terms of allied. Excellences of an ally and then excellences of an enemy. There are six in terms of allies. Allied from the days of the, again, connected with previous coming down. Constant, under control, not having separate interests, great, able to mobilize quickly. Yeah. And then the last, in terms of enemy, there are 14 considerations. Naturally, in Kali Yuga, it's not a problem because everyone is disqualified, not of royal descent. And greediness, there's no lack of greediness in the world today. With a mean counsel. So these are all, you know, if your enemy is having all of these qualities, then it's good. Yeah. can easily defeat them. doing whatever pleases him. Yeah. Impotent. So, one point we mentioned a little earlier, I think at the very beginning, even though we may think that, especially in this presentation, wow, you know, a lot of these things don't really apply to us, or how, you know, what to make or what to do of all this. The important point to remember is the following. We must know what is the standard scientific knowledge, and how, as it is presented in our Shastra, how society is meant to be organized and divided, and therefore we must know, in other words, what is the actual standard. By knowing what is the actual standard, then we can understand, looking at our present condition, how far we are or how close we are to that standard. And of course, we're far from that standard. We're very distant. We'll see tomorrow also, not tomorrow, in the next presentation this afternoon, the science of economics, how we are so, we have deviated immensely from what is the norm. I mean, the same in our presentation on education. By reading the qualities, what are the expected qualities of a teacher? How many teachers are having these qualities in modern day educational system? Practically none. How many of our presidents and prime ministers around the world are having these qualities? Very few, practically none. So therefore, very essential for us to know what is the norm. Just like, again, just to make the point, the norm in terms of lifestyle is agrarian culture. Now we may think, because most of us, or many of us, are born in towns and cities, more so than ever. So therefore, we cannot understand this point about, you know, agrarian culture. But it is the norm in terms of the Vedic culture. This close, daily, intimate connection with the land, with cows, producing our own food, living in a localized, living localized life, isn't it? This is one of the statements made by Chanakya Pandit, how if one wants to be happy, two things will make one more easily happy. And one of them, he mentions, is to be localized, not having to go far. Actually, our work, our profession should be, traditionally, that's what, yeah, within walking distance, so that we're not the further we go away from home, and especially by using, as we do in modern day society, all kinds of modes of transportation, it's dangerous. Accidents happen, traffic jams happen all the time, etc., etc., etc. So being localized is a very important aspect, actually, of the Vedic culture that Prabhupada would often mention. As a matter of fact, one time Prabhupada asked the following question, and I will ask the same question to all of you to see what kind of response we'll get. Then I'll tell you what response Srila Prabhupada gave. So the question that was asked was, what is the definition of intelligence? I don't think anyone will come up with Prabhupada's answer, so I'll just tell it. So we can say so many things about intelligence. So in that particular conversation, Prabhupada responded, intelligence means not to leave your village. Easy enough to understand. It's especially important for village folks. Intelligent means not to leave our village, for those who are born in a village situation. So, living localized, number one. Second point made by Shanaka Pandit, not incurring any debts. Because that's a burden in so many ways. So Vedic culture is not into borrowing money, using credit cards, you know. There used to be a time where one had to be qualified, one had to fill out so many forms to get a credit card. Now they give it to you. They force it upon you, practically speaking. Because they know that as soon as you get a credit card, you'll start using it. And they make money, so much money, etc. You know? And then actually Yudhisthira Maharaj mentions a third way in which we can all be happy. It's very interesting, and especially appropriate in our modern day times. And of course, Yudhisthira Maharaj was a Kshatriya, so a leader, natural leader. So he mentions that if one can digest properly, he'll be happy. Our philosophy is very practical, down to earth. That means eating good food, which we're not doing, isn't it? When we live localized, it means we're able to grow our own food. We have land. And as a matter of fact, our profession, our occupation is in connection with the land, which is meant to be for the majority of people. And just connecting, I'll just repeat this point that I mentioned, I believe, yesterday, how, especially for householders, how many householders here? Brahmacharis, don't raise your hand. How many householders? majority, over 50%. So, in the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, and again, I stress this point, anyone who is a householder, if you have not read the five last chapters of the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, 50% of your life is wasted. Because in those chapters, Srila Prabhupada explains how, in the chapter describing ideal family life, that the majority of householders should have an occupation connected with agriculture, which is totally in line with, you know, agrarian culture. Vedic culture is an agrarian culture. Therefore, we should understand that, you know, the system in which we are living today and the occupations that the vast majority of people have, and that, unfortunately, the vast majority of our devotee householders also have, is a deviation from what is meant to be the norm. And although some people may not like to hear, because what Srila Prabhupada has mentioned, just to remind us, to bring us to a certain level of alertness and consciousness, modern day society or modern-day civilization is a doomed civilization. And therefore, the only hope is this Krishna consciousness movement, the teachings that are given within this movement, and especially teachings that have to do with something we stressed upon yesterday as well. I'll just repeat it because it hasn't come up in this presentation. The importance of cultivating understanding and also applying the concepts of related to spiritual Swadharma and material Swadharma. So this whole presentation actually on Vedic sociology is especially dealing, but not only, but especially dealing with the spirit, I mean, material dimension of life, material, what is called material Swadharma. In the same way that we have something that is according to our, I mean, we have knowledge that is helping us understand our original spiritual nature. There is also knowledge in the Shastra that is helping us to understand what is our material nature. Not only in terms of the modes of material nature, the gunas, which are of course directly connected with understanding our varna, but also connected with how we should live, what education we should get, what occupation, based on that education, we should also adopt, isn't it? So knowing what is a standard can therefore help us understand how far we are from that standard and what steps we should take to come close to that standard. I'm looking at the time, because somebody was very thoughtful to put a red clock. But I have a clock here, but every time I have to go like this, you know, and it's smaller. So anyways, we have about 20 minutes left before the end of this session this morning. If there are comments or questions, we'll be happy to address. And we do have a mic here, if anyone has some reflection, as Vaisheshika Prabhu uses the term reflection. Yeah, we want to hear your reflections, realizations.
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, in one of the slides you were saying that a king should not, a kshatriya should not accept any
charity
should be giving. But in the Nectar of Devotion it says, tathati pratigranati goyam akyati, we have to, you know, actually give charity and take charity. So how does this, because I'm still confused, is it like devotional way of to see this one, or like should I see in different dimension?
No, the idea is that there are prescribed activities in the context of varna, especially. And one who is a king, see, we cannot understand this so easily because we don't have that system in place. When that system is in place, then those who are meant to actually receive charity or donations are primarily the brahmanas, because a kshatriya in executing his duty as a kshatriya is meant especially to give in charity. And so these are basic guidelines that help us understand how society is meant to be managed. They don't contradict the basic injunctions or principles that are given, for example, in the Nectar of Devotion. We just have to be intelligent to properly do things depending on situations or context. So generally, those who are in positions of, let's say, kings or leaders, especially a king, because we're talking in the context of kshatriya, they will subsist by the natural means of taxation, revenues, etc., like that. So they are not they are not meant to be living on the charity of others. Basically, that's what we should understand. So maybe it's not immediately obvious how to apply that because we don't have that kind of situation. But when that situation is there, still these are guidelines that need to be followed for a more organized kind of material arrangement. It doesn't mean that on a personal level, if you know, if you have a contact, it's like, you know, we we give books when we meet, you know, Narendra Modi or anyone in that category. We give them gifts, and gifts that will actually help them become more devotional. We give them photos of Radha and Krishna, or, you know, framed paintings, or just like, well, we didn't give the Bhagavad Gita that was just unveiled, but we can connect or interact with such persons in terms of how it will help them or enhance their Krishna consciousness. But as a general practice, kings don't accept charity as brahmanas accept charity, because brahmana they depend on others, whereas a king, he has his own system in terms of taxation, revenue, etc., like that. Yeah. So on an individual basis, you can present something, as we do, as I mentioned, but still the principle is there that kings should not accept charity. Microphone can come. Okay. Yeah.
Hare Krishna. Yeah. So like you said that mostly people should remain in villages and...
Mostly because of?
The people should remain in villages and lead their life.
Yeah.
But now in present situation we find that there is no much job opportunities in village. So that's why people say that we're going to cities.
You think there's much job opportunity in the cities? You think your job is secure in the city?
Yeah, insecurity is there, correct. But
there is much more job opportunity in the villages. There's always, land is just sitting idle practically everywhere, waiting for you and others to actually do it.
So because of like this artificial means we're using, so that's why like modern scientific means we're using in agriculture, so that's why many people are not needed now in agriculture field.
You see, as devotees, because we have these books, we have this knowledge, we should be cultivating this knowledge, we should be understanding. That's one of the reasons, for example, our ministry is reaching out in the villages, because most people in the villages are not doing agriculture the right way. They're exploiting the land, exploiting the cows, you see. And therefore, there's a need for us as a society, there's a need for us as individuals within that society to give proper example. And it is part of our dharmic responsibility. Dharma is not simply teaching people how to chant Hare Krishna. That's the beginning and that's the basis. And that must remain there all the time. But our dharmic responsibility is also to teach people about how they should properly deal with and utilize material nature, beginning with land, beginning with cows, and the various resources. And because we're not doing that, so many people are going astray, are being misled by leaders who don't have this knowledge. So in other words, we have a dual responsibility as devotees to teach about spiritual dharma as well as to teach about material dharma. If we don't know about material dharma, what can we teach? But we should understand that this is equally, this was brought out in a presentation yesterday. Srila Prabhupada makes the following statement that we cannot practice properly spiritual life without simultaneously knowing and following the principles that dictate a natural, normal way of living in terms of our dealings and exchange with nature. Especially this point, again, very important, I'll repeat it today. Again, Bhishma Dev, very important personality. In the Mahabharata, Bhishma Dev speaks about three gifts of nature. Three gifts of nature that when those are not properly taken care of, when they are manipulated, abused, or destroyed or exploited, then there will be chaos in society. So he begins by mentioning the first gift of nature are cows. Second gift of nature, intimately connected with cows, is land. And the third gift of nature that he mentions is knowledge. If we analyze closely what is happening in the world today, what has been the trend since the last century and continues today, is a total misuse and abuse of cows, land, and knowledge. None of these are meant to be sold or used as commodities, but this is exactly what we are doing. And even our own devotees, they are less familiar actually with this basic knowledge, because whenever we think of cows, we think, well, how much milk is this cow going to give? We think of cows as machines that give milk. And of course, most people just bypass the cows and just buy what is indicated as milk, but which is not milk. You know, what is being sold in most stores and whatnot. The World Health Organization, which is a very prominent, well-established, global organization since many years, some of you may have heard, came out with the following statement just a few months ago, that India, looking at the number of cows that are there, is meant to produce, I forget the exact figure, maybe 24 billion liters of milk a year, let's say. However, on the market, people are selling over 60 billion liters of milk. That means that you have 40 billion liters of milk, which is not milk. Right? And in the report, it mentioned that this means that within the next few years, 87% of the population of India will have cancer. Because we are drinking adulterated milk, number one. We are eating adulterated food. We are wearing adulterated cloth. We should be eating ahimsa food, drinking ahimsa milk, wearing ahimsa cloth, and taking ahimsa medicine, all of which come from the land. Sarva kama duga mahi. Everything comes from the land. This is Vedic culture. So therefore, the need to know and understand what is actually the norm in all of these levels, especially in terms of education, the science of education, the science of politics, the science of governance, isn't it? And the science, as we will see this afternoon, of economics, actual sustainable economics, which, as we will see, is land and cows. Krishi guraksha vanijam vaishya karma swabhavajam. That is the formula, the scientific formula for sustainable economy. I don't want to go ahead of myself here.
Maharaj, I just have the same question based on that.
You already have a question. Pass the mic here. Don't mind.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances.
Yes.
Actually, Maharaj, I want to speak on the present scenario. In a present scenario, 99% of grihasthas, they are not working under direct jurisdiction of ISKCON. They are working outside. So how can we apply Devi Varnashram to them?
Okay, that's a question.
Yes, Maharaj. Yes, please. Hare Krishna.
Does that mean that those 99% of householders who are not directly under ISKCON should not follow the dictates of the directions of the Bhagavatam? Just because we're not living in the temple, just because we're not under the direct jurisdiction of ISKCON, being householders and, you know, having to maintain our family, etc., it doesn't mean that we should not follow and come to the actual level of what is meant to be the ideal Vedic culture. Our householders, in modern day setup, society should know that we are going along with a very deviated system that can collapse and will collapse anytime. And therefore, we are not sufficiently giving attention to the instructions given by our founder, Acharya. Simple example, 50 years ago, we mentioned this again yesterday, Srila Prabhupada wanted that every ISKCON center establish a Varnashram college so that our devotees can begin to understand about Varna and Ashrama and the importance of an organized society based on principles of dharma, and know the difference between what is ongoing today in terms of Varna Sankara, where the majority of our devotees are working in very unfavorable conditions. And the majority of our devotee families, devotee parents, sending their children to non-devotional educational systems, which is very bad. So we have a choice, either to continue being in this, you know, adharmic way, or to study, discuss, and try to understand, okay, how can we come to the actual Vedic standard? That requires some discussion, some direction, etc. Yeah. It was on.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, just to continue to this point, we have a mindset right now, we have to unlearn and relearn the Vedic concept. We have a mindset right now, we have to unlearn and relearn the Vedic concept, is what my understanding is right now. But this is for a grown-up like me. Future generation, what are the programs that we are really looking out in having the Varna and the Ashrama understood for the future generation to come in, and how we can, like, you know, go about it? It's just why I want to understand.
If I understand correctly, you're asking what does ISKCON have in place now in terms of
what may be having now, or what we are we planning something? Because I don't know. It's a right forum to, like, discussing. It's something personal. I really look forward to, like, you know, having my, like, future child being, like, you know, grown up in a Varna and understanding Varna and Ashrama.
Right.
So what is the thing that we are having in mind, or what are the programs that we are having right now, or we may be having in the future? I just want to understand that.
Okay. Within our ISKCON society, those directives and that understanding is clearly given in the various purports, conversations, etc., by Srila Prabhupada. Unfortunately, to a large extent, we have made very little progress in terms of making this happen. Where are the Gurukulas, number one? Where are the Varnashram colleges, number two? Where are the self-sufficient communities, number three? Prabhupada said the day will come when hundreds and thousands of people will flock to our communities because they won't have any food. Well, it looks like our own devotees are going to have to flock also because we have only a few of these places, and we're not sufficiently discussing these topics. I should say that in the last few years, I do see some positive, very much welcomed signs of some of our devotees speaking about traditional education, for example, and the need to, some parents are taking, I would say, important steps in that direction. There is a little bit of an awareness that is in the making, but I would say it's very very small, and we have within our within ISKCON, for example, still to this day, we still don't have a ministry for Varnashram development. We have global ministries for education, we have global ministries for finance, we have global ministries for justice, we have global ministry for congregational development, but unfortunately to this day we don't have any global ministry for Varnashrama Dharma. And we don't have Varnashram colleges. So it is the duty and responsibility of every rank and file devotee to become as aware and knowledgeable about what Srila Prabhupada is giving us, and then amongst devotees in different temples have some of these discussions and bring this up to various people who might be in a position to help introduce, for example, a Varnashram college. Without Varnashram college, for the majority of us, we cannot even begin to understand, you see. And as long as we remain within our city, urban settings, we'll never understand. You know? The more we start actually associating and putting ourselves in a different kind of a context, then this whole question of Varna, for example, very easily, quickly becomes understood and known. And we should know also that, you know, today's topic is about leadership. We can see how, my God, you know, such high level, such wonderful qualities that are meant to be there. And then, of course, we know the present condition of our modern leaders in general. So we're very, very far from what is meant to be the ideal, which should serve as an impetus for us to give more stress and importance on training some of our devotees to develop these different qualities. These things go hand in hand. It's you know, like the whole spiritual, we speak about Varnashrama Dharma not to minimize or give less importance to, let's say, Bhagavat Dharma, or the whole science and dimension of bhakti or devotional service, but to illustrate and point out that actually these two are meant to go hand in hand. And when we neglect one, as we are doing today, then we are doing ourselves and the future generations a disservice. You see. I wish I could say more things, maybe on the positive side. Oh, yeah, we have this in place, we have this in place. But it is very much lagging. I cannot, you know, truthfulness is one of the... Okay. Any other last?
Thank you, Maharaj.
One more here. Okay. Ladies first.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. When we see seminars like this and when we read books that you have written, after having read all that, we can see the wide departure that is there from the ideal. And we want to return to the ideal. The departure is so much and we feel that we are caught in a vicious circle. How to really break that vicious circle?
Like, how many?
How to break that vicious circle that in which we are caught, we are trapped? What should be the steps, like number one step, number two step? How do we really break the circle and return to the standard?
If I understood correctly, how do we, did you say how do we make the mission successful?
No, Maharaj. I said like when we know the ideal.
When
like,
we know the ideal, yeah.
And we know how far we are from the ideal.
Yes.
So there has to be some kind of, like we are trapped in a kind of vicious circle. We want to do, we want to go back to the ideal, but yeah, it's so difficult. So how do we break that vicious circle? How do we take up the transitory phase? So what could be the steps in that transitory phase?
One of the important ways, you know, once we know what is actually the ideal, and once we know where we are, very far from that ideal, one of the important ways is to start discussing more, much more amongst devotees on these topics that are presented in the pages of the Bhagavatam. That is one way. Another way is to actually, in our different congregations, different temples, here in India or anywhere around the world, is to make some tangible steps to actually encourage devotees who have some understanding, some knowledge, some experience to establish Varnashram colleges. Unless we establish Varnashram colleges, a lot of this information will just, you know, go over our head. So establishing Varnashram colleges, again, a standing order given to us by Srila Prabhupada, is very essential and very fundamental. And so therefore, you know, something that was again and again stressed by Srila Prabhupada, education and training is very important. And although Varnashram College, for example, as stated by Srila Prabhupada, is primarily for men, there is also a whole educational aspect also for women. So that those directives are given in our Shastra, and therefore Matajis can also be involved in especially training up young girls in these basic principles in this culture. And to a large extent, we're talking about culture here. But a lot of this, unless we make a much greater effort than we have so far to have as many of our devotees who are not actively involved in city preaching, unless we have more devotees take some steps and some action towards living what is the ideal in terms of self-sufficiency, in terms of communities, then we will not be able to practically realize and understand, you know. It's like if you want to know about a cow, you have to go where the cow is. If you want to know about land, you have to go where the land is. If you want to know about the natural interaction that is meant to take place, then we have to at least start, you know, undertake certain activities that will bring us out of this otherwise very unnatural and suffocating situation in which we find ourselves. Of course, you know, the basic practice of our Krishna consciousness, we should try to enhance and to improve, which will allow us to deal with and cope with the situation better. But an outcome of our increased increased quality in terms of our practice of our devotional service is that this should bring us to a more clear understanding of what we should do on the practical level in terms of connected with this whole dimension of material swadharma. So we have to discuss these points and to take certain steps such as establishing these varnashram colleges, having our matajis teach to our children as well how they should become ideal. Vedic culture especially promotes what is an ideal mother, what is an ideal wife. This is our standard Vedic culture. There's more to be said on this, of course, and I know there are a few other questions, but our time is up. We will resume our fourth and last session this afternoon, beginning at 2 o'clock, 2 to 4, and you're all welcome to attend. Thank you very much for being here this morning. Hare Krishna. Jai Sri Prabhupada ki. We have some books for those who may not, books and some pamphlets in the back for anyone who's interested in. Yeah.